Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Before beginning work on their debut album, try that again. There we go. Keep it simple, stupid. I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this very fine episode, we talk to the people from Plan B Theater about Nothing Personal, the first show of their new season. We talk to Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp, Utah about all the best Halloween foods and treats up and down the Wasatch Front. This season, the Plan B Theater Company decided to dedicate the entire run to plays from one specific playwright, Eric Samuelson. He's penned several plays over the years that Plan B has produced, such as Amerigo, Miasma, and Borderlands, and he's written for other independent theater companies throughout the state as well. This season begins with Nothing Personal, an exploration of the loss of civil liberties in America and the human rights violations that have disfigured our culture. Slug writer John Ford sat down with Samuelson, as well as Plan B's producing director, Jerry Rapier, about the play and this coming season.
Jerry, can you tell us a little bit about Plan B's 2013-2014 season?
Well, it is the second season in the last 5 years that we've devoted to the work of a single playwright. So we did all new plays by Matthew Ivan Bennett 5 years ago, and now this season we're doing all plays by Eric Samuelson.
Now, how did you guys decide to do the season of Eric?
Well, one of the plays has kind of been on the back burner for a while, and then Eric gave me a draft of another play that I really thought was intriguing, and then it just kind of made sense to start looking at what other plays could fit with those two plays. Cheryl, who runs Plan B with me, and I had been talking about this possibility for a couple of years, and Eric was the logical person to invite to do this. He's been writing for Plan B for about a decade, and it just seemed like a crazy experiment we should give another whirl.
Eric, I was just about to say, you've been writing for Plan B for about 10 years.
That's right, yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about your previous work and maybe talk about some of your experiences with Plan B?
Well, I got started with Plan B through their Slam Festival. Plan B does this crazy 24-hour theater thing where, you know, we create a play overnight, rehearse it all day, and then perform it the next evening, off book, more or less. and it's a fantastic thing. It's just, it really is, you know, trapeze without a safety net. And the very first year I did Slam, the title it gave me was the Butcher, the Beggar, and the Bedtime Buddy. I decided for some reason to take absolutely literally and have three characters, one a butcher, one a beggar, and one a bedtime buddy. And the play worked reasonably well. And then Jerry contacted me and he said, look, we think there's more to those characters that you haven't explored if you thought of expanding it. And until he said that, I hadn't thought of expanding it. But as soon as he did, I thought, boy, you know, there really is a lot more I could say with these guys. And then I added a fourth character, and then we kind of went with it. And that became Miasma, which Plan B did, what, 95? No, 2000.
2006.
2005, six, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first Slam was in 2004.
Right.
I'm not sure what happened for you in 95. But
in 95, one of my children was born, actually, which is a great year. 2005, though, I did a different Slam, and it wasn't as conducive to expansion, but that's code for really, really blue. But
well, it was called Spoiled Cheese. Who knew it was prophetic?
That's right. For some reason, I was into odors back then with Miasma and Spoiled Cheese. But I mean, Miasma turned into this very political thing about the beef industry and stuff like that, and ought to have turned me into a vegan, which it did not, in fact, succeed in doing. And then from then on, let's see, we did.
It was a while. Nothing Personal, which we're doing this season. We were going to do a couple of seasons later, and then we actually bumped the play so we could do the season devoted to Matt Bennett. And then
so we had Nothing Personal sort of hanging out. We all liked it, but this just didn't seem to have a place for it, a slot for it.
Yeah, and then we did Amerigo in 2000. 2010, mm-hmm. and then Borderlands in 2011.
Right.
And now a whole hell of a lot of Eric in 2013 and 14.
Yeah.
Well, as a former professor of theater, has teaching theater changed the way that you write plays?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question.
Can you stand up to your own scrutiny?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I suppose in a way, because the first thing I have to teach students is structure. And I became really, really, really into structure. I taught a structure class. And so when I look at a play now, the first draft is usually just a mess. But then I go back and I go, okay, actually, who is the protagonist? What do they want? What will they do to achieve it? You know, and we just go back to absolutely just basic Aristotelian structure. And then from there, I can shape the play in subsequent drafts. So I think so. The other thing is, you know, when you're dealing with student playwrights, you kind of have to keep on your toes. And you kind of have to keep writing because they're doing great work and you don't want to, you know, fall behind. So it was a motivator for me just to keep writing. And then it was just a great pleasure for me to have one of my students that I'm particularly fond of, Matthew Green, have his play on the last Plan B season, Adam and Steve.
Yeah.
In the MTC.
Now, your latest play, like you mentioned, is called Nothing Personal. Can you tell us what's it all about?
Well, Nothing Personal started off to be a play about Susan McDougal and Kenneth Starr. For people who don't remember that history, during the Clinton presidency, the Whitewater investigation was led by Kenneth Starr, who was special prosecutor. And it was supposed to be an investigation into real estate deals in Arkansas. And Starr just became fascinated with what seemed to him a more productive kind of way to try and impeach a president, which was through sex scandals. And Susan McDougal was kind of the tipping point between those two places because her husband, Jim McDougal, had been the Clintons' business partner in the Whitewater real estate deal, which she hadn't had much to do with. But for some reason, Kenneth Starr got it into his head that she had had an affair with Clinton. And then that was confirmed by both her husband, Jim McDougal, and by one of the main witnesses against Clinton, a former Klan Grand Dragon named David Hale, who'd been a traffic judge for a couple of years, so therefore was known as Judge David Hale, so that gave him some extra credibility. And so they all testified under oath that they knew that Susan McDougal had an affair with Bill Clinton. So she was told, all you have to do is just confirm that. Just confirm that you had an affair with him, and we'll let you go, and everything will be fine. She refused. And so she was found in contempt of court and thrown in jail for 18 months. In fact, actually served her time in a maximum security prison, in solitary confinement in the wing for death penalty. An abuse of power that's really mind-boggling. And eventually, of course, Bill Clinton pardoned her for everything that had happened. But I've always been fascinated by her, by just the courage of somebody who's going to say, look, I am not going to say under oath something that's not true. When it would have been far easier for her if she had just said, yeah, I slept with him. You know, it wouldn't have meant anything to anybody, really, except it would have really damaged the president, and it didn't happen. But then, as I wrote the play, I got more and more interested in sort of a Bush administration abuses of power and other violations of civil liberties. And so I started to expand it. And as I did, I depersonalized the characters. They're no longer Susan McDougal and Kenneth Starr. They're just Susan and Kenneth. And they now stand for a much larger set of civil liberties violations that have taken place. So, for example, at one point, Kenneth orders Susan to be waterboarded. That never happened to Susan McDougal, but it sure happened. And so the play becomes then my sort of imaginative journey through a whole world of human rights violations and civil liberties violations. And that becomes then the message of the play. So the earliest scene, and the first scene in the entire play, is taken straight from the actual case of McDougal and Starr. And subsequently, things get worse and worse and worse for this character, Susan, who comes to represent victims of that kind of abuse. So people coming to see it shouldn't expect, you know, an historical recreation of the actual life of Susan McDougal, although she's a tremendously heroic character, a person. It's a larger examination of human rights violations that we like to say are Bush administration anomalies, but which we have to kind of regretfully admit are continuing to happen under the current president. A president I supported and voted for twice, volunteered for him, made phone calls for him, gave him money. and yet who has still not lived up to the promise that this would kind of end.
It's kind of inevitable that when you reach that level of power that you will abuse it in some way.
I think so. Absolutely right, yeah.
And I think we would be probably hard-pressed to find any president who didn't fall into that category, probably naively thinking that they wouldn't be the president that would further any kind of torture or violations of that sort, but it just seems to come with the job in some crazy way.
Well, William Henry Harrison, I don't think, actually abused anybody. he was only president for 30 days, so I don't think he had time.
Maybe he was a very quick study.
He was desperately ill all the time. So.
Yeah, it seems, particularly in the last century, it seems like...
Very much so, absolutely. You know, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely, and presidents have tremendous power. That's kind of the gist of the play, and that's the conversation I'm hoping it perhaps at least participate in, if not start. You know, to talk about what our society is like today, what we're capable of and what we've been capable of and what we continue to be capable of.
Nice. It's a pretty dark play. It all takes place in the cell that she is being held in.
Right.
And we're never really sure where it is or really the time frame. We just know that major events in her life have happened without her because she's being held in a very American way, I guess is a good way to say it, and without any sense of her own personal civil liberties.
And there are occasional references to a Jim or a David or a Bill, but they're not really explored in any more detail than that. Just passing references to them.
There's another theme in the play about the religious right, really the power of extremism in any way.
And ideology generally.
Yeah. What that it does color every... Whether or not the sitting president is of a certain faith or a certain leaning, the presence or lack of that religious fervor is a huge factor in how people view the president now. And it seems to be the overarching schism in the country is how people respect or don't respect each other's faith or choice not to exercise a faith.
Right.
For sure.
That seems
right.
Almost the more troublesome thing.
It does, you know, the more troublesome, yeah.
Nothing Personal runs from October 24th until November 3rd at the Rose Wagner Theater in downtown Salt Lake City, located at 138 West Broadway. For tickets and more information, visit the Plan B Theater Company online at planbtheater.org. Formal is a four-piece alternative rock band from right here in Salt Lake City. Formal released their demo, The Hipster Lips, back in October of 2012, and then they began work on their full-length debut. That album came out on October 5th. We're going to play a song called Astronauts. the album, check them out at formal.bandcamp.com. And for more information on the band, visit them online at facebook.com/formaltheband.
Plan B Theater's 2013-14 season is devoted entirely to the work of resident playwright Eric Samuelson. The season opens with Nothing Personal, featuring Susan McDougall, Kenneth Starr, and The Abuse of Power, followed by Radio Hour, Episode 8, Fariana, where the writers of a children's television show are possessed by their own characters. John Maynard Keynes and Friedrich Hayek, with Economics and Mortal Danger in Clearing Bombs, and a series of Mormon women confront their own culture in Three. Visit planbtheater.org for details and to subscribe today.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting October 22nd and bouncing right up close to Halloween about a week later. Lots of great stuff at slugmag.com. You'll want to check out that calendar every day of the week. There's always new events being added. On Tuesday, October 22nd, the fine John Vanderslice is headlining a show at Urban. He's been coming here for years. He's played at Kilby. He's played at Urban. He's played at Valour down in Provo. Always a great show. His records are some of my favorites of the last 10 years. Over at the Complex, Sleigh Bells brings their big, loud, bombastic show. They've been a really good show both times I've seen them, both at Urban and at the Depot. They clearly are just growing and growing, playing at the Complex this time. That's a two-piece that makes some serious noise. Wear your earplugs, kids. Same night, up at Park City Live, Old Industrial Hands KMFDM is back. Always a good time as well. They're a good dance band. I'm sure it'll be quite the scene to see the KMFDM fans on Park City's Main Street. On Wednesday, October 23rd, Joe Pug and Vandeveer are at the State Room. That's a great rootsy show for people who like your stuff with a little acoustic tinge to it. That should be a fine one. On Friday, October 25th, the Helio Sequence, straight out of Portland, and Menomina together at the Urban Lounge. That's a fine double bill for a Friday night in Salt Lake City. I highly encourage you to go check out that one. On Saturday, October 26th, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. They've been through town so many times, they finally blew up huge. They're headlining at the Maverick Center. They're bringing some really cool stuff with them, though. Talib Kweli and Big Crit are on the bill as well, so that should be pretty fun. And then on Sunday, October 27th, it's the Geek Show Movie Night and a Halloween costume contest over at Broovies. Get your best Halloween gear on and go check out a flick with the Geek Show boys. That's your weekly daily calendar for October 22nd to October 28th. To put your own events in there, visit us at slugmag.com. That doesn't cost you a damn dime. For a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, though, you can add some quality content to your listings. The Circulars are a four-piece rock band from Salt Lake City. They originally formed in April of 2013, and they immediately started working on their debut album. That album came out just in late September, and we're going to play a song off of that called Living Images. Thank you. The Circulars will be playing Slug Localized in December at the Urban Lounge, and stay tuned to the podcast and the Slug magazine for the coming details on that show. For more information on the band, visit thecirculars.bandcamp.com to download the album, and you can also visit them at facebook.com/thecirculars. Once again, we welcome the amazing, the inimitable, the hardworking Jeffrey Stedman from Yelp, Utah into the studio to help fill us in on what's going on around town. Jeffrey, welcome.
I think you have me confused with somebody else, my friend.
You were the man who went out and found actual Halloween-related food things, which is no easy task. It might be a stretch because we all just really dig candy and maybe bobbing for apples and pumpkin-flavored beer, I suppose, maybe might qualify, but... But, you know, let's see what we got out there.
Yes.
I mean, there's got to be some goodies, right?
I do want to touch on one of the things you said there, pumpkin-flavored beer. I feel like all the breweries do it. So, I mean, we could read off a bunch of stuff about all the breweries, or we could just go out to our favorite brewery and have their pumpkin ale.
You know, another thing I've noticed this year, I've never seen so much mention on Facebook, Twitter, whatever, of the, like, pumpkin mocha coffee drinks that are out there. Like, apparently everyone makes those too.
that's a good segue. We're going to start off with Steamhead Cafe, which is at 2470 South Main Street. They're 5 out of 5 after just 5 reviews.
Ooh.
Donna B says, I'm back again to rave about the pumpkin chai. Melissa ostensibly is the gal behind the counter. Melissa mixes her own spice blends, and this was amazing.
Whoa.
I don't know if she sang it like that, but I'm feeling sassy, so we're going for it. Sorry, Donna. Pumpkin latte lovers really need to go check this place out. You won't be disappointed. So, there's a bunch a bevy of beverages with pumpkin.
Right. I'm not familiar with the Steamhead Cafe either. That's exciting.
Yeah.
New spot.
It popped up. I don't want to lie to you guys, but I first noticed it about 8 months ago, 10 months ago. It could be much older than that, but that's kind of when I noticed
it come
through.
Pretty close to the bowling alley down there. I like that.
Yeah. The second thing, I always think of Halloween with donuts. And I don't know if that's just me, but that's a connection I always make. Every year at Halloween, I have a donut eating contest with friends.
Whoa.
And
all right.
I'm undefeated since 2008. Just saying.
I am the inventor of the game and the ruler of the game as well. I like it. Any excuse for a good donut.
Yeah, it's not quantity, it's speed. And I, last year, there's down to one guy who challenged me every year now. And I say contest, it sounds very fancy, but it's just one guy.
Yeah. It's you and a guy in a car.
It's me and Brad Rosenhan, and he's horrible. So, Rosie, if you're out there, deal with it, buddy. I had to eat 3 donuts. He had to eat 1, and I still beat him.
Whoa!
Because he's horrible.
Okay.
My Sugar's Donut Shop, 4 out of 5 after 13 reviews. Zach F. says, he had a sticky bun. The dough was wonderfully flaky. The caramel sauce, or caramel, if you're from that side of the tracks, was sweet enough to make the filling pop out of your teeth and was contrasted nicely with the cinnamon and nuts. Very seasonal flavor.
Yeah.
Caramel, and donuts are a thing for me.
That sounds like a tradition that needs to be started by all of us.
Yeah.
Donuts at Halloween.
Yeah. Let's talk about apples for a second.
Sure.
A couple of apple stops. One's kind of far, but worth it, and the other one is pretty close and also worth it. Rolly's Red Barn. Hey, if you're on I-15 and you're headed south in the Santa Quinta area, 4 and a half out of 5 after 13 reviews.
Whoa.
You'll see the signs. I can give you the address. Just look it up on Yelp. It's a big red barn. It's the only thing in Santa Quinta. Penny W. says, I thought the place was a restaurant-type stop, but they only offer really delicious ice cream, fudge, and other candies, and it's all about apples, and they have apple pie. And fresh apples and apple cider that you gotta go hit up.
Awesome.
If you're looking for something closer, let's talk about Farnsworth Farms and Cider Mill.
Hey,
right here in the valley, people.
Whoa,
5 out of 5 after 3 reviews. So we need more content. But Tristan A. has this to say about Farnsworth, which is 11228 South 7th East in Sandy. We're going to wax poetic.
Yes.
I need to preface this.
Can we get some background music later in production, Gavin?
Tristan A. says, sipping apple cider takes me back to when Mom and Dad used to toss us in the Chevy wagon, 2-tone turquoise and white, and drive us over the Santa Cruz Mountains to Capitola Beach. The must stop once we got to Watsonville was a fruit stand that served cherry apple cider by the cup. Oh, heaven, oh, joy. She continues.
Beautiful.
On a golden fall afternoon or even a snowy winter day, do you ever get the craving for that tart, one-of-a-kind, sweet taste of real apple cider? Well, search no more, you Utah appleholics. I got you covered. Oh, Tristan.
She should be getting...
She paints a picture,
doesn't she?
She
gets extra credit for this, that's for sure. I'm mesmerized.
She knows what she's talking about.
She's luring me to the Sandy Cider Mill already.
If you go on Yelp and find Tristan, she finds some really, like, obscure places to review. She has a pie stop in, like, North Ogden that is
all right.
Haunts my mind. But anyway, yeah, check out their apple cider, which is a Halloween favorite.
And right here in the Valley, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then finally, caramel apples.
Yes.
5 out of 5 after just 2 reviews over at CK Cummings. Mike O, I'm not going to read his review because he goes way poetic about it, but it goes back to 1984.
Whoa.
And he talks about when he went to go on his LDS mission. He wanted, it was like going to Japan, and he wanted like a specialty candy made for just the red dot in the center of the Japanese flag.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, how about you guys melt down some bears, and didn't work. And then they did like gelatin. And anyway, it worked. And then he apparently moved forward a decade, and he was on the East Coast somewhere at a really like fancy hotel. It was like $500 a night, and he went in and they had a mint on the pillow, and it was a CK Cummings mint. So
hey,
anyway, that's a horrible, Mike, I'm real sorry I slaughtered your story. It's beautiful and it brought a tear to my eye, but the point of the matter is that they do a mean caramel apple over at CK Cummings, and they get the candy part right. It's according to their words, sweet Granny Smith apple dipped in rich caramel made from scratch. Mm. Our confectioners then sprinkle, dip, roll, and lace delightful layers in just the right amounts for an incredible looking and yummy treat. Caramel
apple. That sounds awesome to me. I love the Granny Smith apple. I love caramel. Put it all together. Now we're talking.
Yep. You still have a couple of weeks to go out, or let's see, just a few days, I think, to go out to some of the farmers markets before they close down.
That's right.
End
of
October.
By the time this airs, you'll be pushing your luck. So everyone, store your apples now. As you hear our voices, go get your apples
ready. Put your apples away.
Get ready for the caramel dipping. Awesome. Well, that is a, I'm impressed with the array of things you found here.
Nobody does a candy corn salad in round town. Let's just say that.
I just perused the Smith candy aisle and watched them make the turn from Halloween to Christmas candy in about a day's time, And
yeah, sometime around
September. I'm pretty sure the Cadbury July. Eggs will be out there any day now.
Stop it.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for coming in. Where can we find you? I know we can find you at Yelp Utah on Twitter.
I am. Facebook.com/YelpSLC. Find us on Instagram, YelpSLC. And as always, Yelp.com. Or you can download the app for Android, iPhone, BlackBerry, Windows Phone.
BlackBerry?
Motorola
Hang
Flip Phone.
Yes.
We don't really have a Motorola Flip Phone app.
That's good.
We should, though. That market is just
it's about to blow
bright.
Up. I can feel it. Excellent. Well, thank you for coming in. And we will, of course, have you back in to talk about, I am going to imagine, something a little wintry or fall-like the next time.
Swimming
even beyond
pools.
This.
Swimming pools.
Movie stars.
Swimming pool and hot dog.
Excellent. Thanks, Jeffrey. As always, thanks for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit us online at slugmag.com. The Via Blue Shades are reuniting later this month for a one-night-only show at Urban Lounge, and we'd like to hear what your fondest memory of the gigantic group is. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We just might play your bizarro memory of the Via Blue Shades on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake, recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and the technical design by Kate Colgan. Be sure to tune in again next week when we talk to the Bad Kids, the Vile Blue Shades, and Mike Riedel comes in with all of our local beer news. Thanks for listening.